This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
Hello, Adam. How you doing?
Okay, hello, Kim. Charlie, I'm doing good. With yourself?
I'm great. Great.
Nice.
Today, I'm sure you can see a certain face in the audience. A face that we haven't seen in a long
In
time.
a long while.
Yeah, showed up. But this allegation, I'll take it on with him one-on-one after the conversation I
Please
have.
make sure you add me to the chat.
And you see, this makes you realize that no. Even when men are hard at work, focused, the topic becomes critical. They will come and join us. Okay, great. So yeah, today we are continuing a conversation we started last week, and it's a conversation we would bring up every couple of weeks, and it's about migrating out of Ghana. The economic situation is hard. People are also looking for educational opportunities, or for whatever reason, people are thinking about life outside of Ghana. Last week, we had Edwin join us in conversation, and a few other people shared their experiences. Well, I also shared my experience moving to the US, and we discussed why people moved out of Ghana to other countries, why people in Ghana want to move out. We talked about the pros, the cons, the risks, things people wish they knew before moving. And so if anyone is thinking about this, I strongly encourage you go to a podcast or go wherever you listen to podcasts and search for Money for Host to play back that good conversation. And also you can go on YouTube to search or just play back here on Twitter. I think last week we had a lot of technical issues, so we had to break it up into pieces, I think. But anyway, yeah, we are going to continue the conversation. And the way we are doing it is we are looking at different countries that people are thinking about going to. One of the very popular destinations for Ghanaians lately, in fact, Ghanaians and Nigerians, Africans, all are thinking about it in Canada. So we have two friends of mine who are joining us. We have Emily and Abigail joining us to talk about their experience moving to Canada. So let's start with Emily. Emily, how are you doing?
Hi, Ellie Cam. I'm good, yourself?
I'm okay. I'm all right. You know, I'm getting here.
Good.
Thank you for understanding and coming to talk to us to share your experiences. Can we start with you telling us a bit about yourself and why you chose to move to Can or why you moved out of Ghana and to Canada?
Okay, sure. Let me see if I can summarize that in 2 minutes. So my name is Emily Japasu. And I was an old student, or I completed Legon, alumni of Legon, and then came to do my master's in business administration at York University, that's Schulich School of Business in Canada. And prior to moving to Canada, I was with GT Bank for a bit, and then I also worked with Airtel then and Airtel Tigo now. And the reason why I moved, oh, I'd say, truthfully speaking, got to a point where I felt like, okay, I honestly can't see if there's any progression available for me where I was. So I felt like, okay, I had heard about Canada, this, Canada, that. I feel like, okay, yeah. Of all the countries, I did apply to a few schools, Canada, US, probably Australia too. And but then Canada seemed a bit more like promising than the rest. So when I got the opportunity, I just took the Canadian school offer that when I got it. And then this is where I am now. I moved to Canada in 2020, actually, I think December, in the heat of the COVID everything. So it was an interesting journey. But yeah.
That's interesting. Thank you for sharing that. You didn't see a progression upward for you. Okay. Switching. Hello, Abigail. How you doing?
Hi, Elikim. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm great. Great. Thank you for making the time to join us today and being open to share your experiences. So, can you please tell us a bit about yourself and why you chose to leave Ghana to Canada?
Okay, so my name is Abigail Lottery. I what else? So I moved to Canada, did my MBA at UBC, currently started my own startup, which is basically into data and analytics. I think for me, it wasn't really moving to Canada. I always wanted to do a graduate study abroad. And Canada wasn't necessarily on my radar. First of all, I think when I was doing my undergrad at the University of Ghana, I got the opportunity to, travel for global competitions, and it really piqued my interest to, get the opportunity to do studies abroad because there was something different about, the students I was seeing in those competitions, those who were studying abroad and all that. So it was more of an interest of mine to get the opportunity to study outside of Ghana. At the time, I think I was looking at Germany and the United States after applying to a couple of schools and you know, not getting a scholarship, which was one of my priorities. A friend of mine just called me and told me, hey, have you heard about this school? It's one of the top schools, because the person also knew I was like considering schools who were like really at the top. Then he was like, you can apply to this. I applied and got in, but I got a better offer. So I applied before actually going to read about it. So at the time, I didn't really know anything about Canada. Fast forward, I researched about, you know, Canada, compared it to another offer I got from the US, and it seemed like Canada was a better place for me to be. So I decided to move here. So yeah, that was the long version of why Canada.
Okay, that's interesting. So you saw how other people from other places were conducting themselves, and you wanted a taste of that kind of education. That's great. That's great. Ultimately, you both chose Canada. I guess we could start where we ended. Abigail, why Canada? Yeah. You had multiple offers, and perhaps let's talk about the country-specific options in Canada that made you choose it. I'm sure maybe the schools also offered some unique things, but what exactly about Canada drew you there?
I think what drew me to Canada at the time, so I got another offer, a really generous offer, better than even the Canadian one, was in the United States, Ohio State University, right? But I was speaking with my friends who had finished their programs, and basically they were like packing their bags and coming, because I think that was it 2020 or 2019? Yeah. The reason being the immigration system in the United States was very complex and tedious, and, you know, like every time everything is tied to your visa. So because her visa was expiring, her landlord was like not also going to let them stay. So that was one of the major things. And I think it was also in the heat of the Black Lives Matter, the George Floyd, and, you know, reading the news about the United States, reading the news about Canada, there was nothing happening in Canada. It seemed peaceful, quiet. And I think that was something I was looking for. So yeah, I went for Canada, basically based on those two reasons, even though, you know, I was getting a better offer in the United States.
Wow, that gets me thinking about times and seasons. That unique time brought up all those peculiar issues, which, granted, some were systemic. It came to the forefront of what people were thinking about. Just last week, I was talking to someone who got admission to Duke University in the US, and he's Nigerian and he didn't get a visa. A lot of people are not getting visas. And some of the reasons that you can insinuate from it is times and seasons. What's going on with the economy? How people in the US are not even finding jobs and all that. So yeah, it's I can appreciate what you are saying. At that particular time, you had decisions to make, and these were the issues at hand. Okay, Emily, how about you? What else were you thinking about?
So I was going to say, Abigail and I do have mutual friends. Her reasoning is actually also part of my reason, in the sense that I know that when you finish school with US like this, I'm not too sure of the exact steps, but like, your study permit is done, you have to get like the H1B1 or something, and you have to get a company that would apply for a permit for you. You have like, it's like a draw, some whole process. So I'm like, you see, I can't come in, especially if I'm leaving Ghana and I'm looking for better opportunities, not come here and then be stranded after I'm done with school of 2 years. And especially if in a situation where you don't get full scholarship, like you would want to, and you struggle to pay your fees and you're done and you can't get to stay, then I wouldn't want to sort of risk my life, not my life per se, because not dead per se, but not risk the my entire future there and not get the opportunity to stay. So I think coincidentally when that was happening, I had a cousin in Scotland who told me about, okay, Canada PR application process. So I went to read about it and I heard about express entry. So with that, you can check your scores. It's more like a US visa lottery, but this time around, unlike the visa lottery where it's actual lottery, the express entry is more about the, how do you call it? There are some points they allot to you based on your qualification, your age, your like marital status, that kind of thing. And when I saw it and I got it just with an undergrad degree, my score is this level. If I should get a master's degree, I can go to up to a certain point, and then there's a high chance that I'll get to stay in Canada. Like it gives me a more permanent stay than going to the US and now trying to figure out what step to take or what not to take, especially if you don't get a job quickly. So in that regard, I decided that, okay, let me just choose the Canada option. And I didn't really go check the rest of the places as in Australia, because I know people in Australia have been there for like 5 years if they have gotten permanent residency. So I'm like, okay, Canada seems like the safest and the easiest route for you to be able to get something more permanent and more concrete. So that's what I went with. And not to take us off topic, but one thing Abigail said that also led me to want to do my master's outside was, in undergrad, got opportunity to go to Norway in third year. And when I came back, I was like, nope, I am leaving Ghana to go back to do my master's outside. And so that was one reason. So when I came back in 2015, yeah, from Norway, I actually tried applying to schools already, like Canada, like I did Alberta University and this thing. When I applied, they told me, no, you need to have work experience first. So when I finished with national service and I felt like, okay, yeah, Ghana has become a bit tougher for me. And I was like, okay, this is the opportunity. I've already gotten a work experience. Let me try applying for the master's now. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to leave.
That's interesting. So for you, it's about the safety of your options after you were done with school, and also the fact that the Canadian immigration process was not complex. It was simple and it was straightforward. You could see the path even before you started. That's interesting. I'm just to go off on that tangent, because both of you mentioned this. You've both had the experience of people being abroad or people having a foreign education. Emily, what did you see in Norway that made you in 2015 say, nah, you have to go back and go and have higher education elsewhere?
Yeah, me. Okay, sorry.
But I was even going to get to the fact that Canada is also cold. I mean, Southern Canada right now, that's what we call upstate New York. But yeah, it's cold. So why? Why are you doing this to yourself?
Oh, well, Norway too was cold. But I think first thing I saw was, like, let me talk like a villager. That was the first time I've seen them being able to, I think you can withdraw like dollars from the ATM. Like, you banking hall wasn't busy like the way Ghana, you go into banking hall, you stand in a queue for like 2 hours. Nope. Everything was just like, there was a very systematic approach to everything happening. So you can book appointments, you do this, you do like everything was, you see, that's where the system is working. Let's use Trinidad as like glass and quan. So that is when I realized that, yeah, this is it. Like, the experience, you see these people are much more developed. Like, there's progress. And you know, once you put in, like, even a little work, you'd, whether little or, like, whatever this thing, amount of work or like, this thing you put into whatever you're doing, you will reap it. So if you want to earn more, you're definitely going to put in more work. If you said, okay, this is your level, you want to do 20%, you earn. So whatever work you put in, you definitely get the result, and then you are rewarded for it in that capacity. Unlike, I feel like, truth be told, we all know as Ghanaians that sometimes Ghana, you will do, there's nothing called overtime pay. You work and work and work Saturday, Sunday, and still nobody's minding. You just pay your salary pay and then you're gone. But that was not the experience back when in Norway. And these people are very much like they are respectful of everybody, in as much as you have a few standouts. But then, yeah, they are respectful of everybody, and when you put in the work, yes, you definitely get the results for it. So, or the benefits of it. So that's one, like, that is why I knew that, okay, when I left Norway after 1 year, I knew I wanted to go back again to like another like developed country, even if it's not Norway.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, you like this where there's the system works 24/7 and extra reward. There's extra reward for extra effort. All right, I can appreciate that. Okay, so coming back to Abigail, let's talk about the process from your idea formation. People go abroad for multiple reasons. Some find someone to marry and go. Some go for school. Some go for professional. Find a job or something, or family bring takes them there. I guess for both of you, your path is the education path. So let's start with the path that you went through. If you have any idea about the other paths, we can touch on that in a bit. So from the point of getting the school, what was the process up until when you arrived in Canada? Or did the steps that you took, even in applying, help you with the process to get to Canada?
Yeah, I think just like you said, there are lots of processes, and for me, I really always vouch or advise people to come through the education route simply because I feel like one of the best options. But then I also know of a lot of numerous paths. In fact, quick plug, my husband does such immigration services for people, and just tomorrow we are actually meeting a family that is moving here. So there are lots of paths, one being the express entry, which you can apply from outside of Canada. I came through the study route, and let me mention that even before getting a scholarship and coming, I had applied a year ahead of time for a study permit and gotten it without full funding. So it's also very possible to, get what's it called? Get a visa without necessarily having full funding. You just have to know the ins and outs. So for me, doing it the first time had provided me with a bit of experience doing it the second time, so it wasn't very difficult. Plus, I also had an immigration consultant who was assisting me all through it. But all in all, I think just having the right documents and being very transparent through the process really helped me be successful with the immigration application. It didn't take quite long for me to get it. And I think once I got it, I just basically started preparing, just like every person, reading about what I need to bring on into Canada. My school had already prepared all those in terms of, bring this, bring warm clothes, prepare for this. So that was basically one of the resources I used. But I think, and the reason I say the study route is the most safe, or I recommend for people, is because you see, for the education, and I'm just going to give you a high level of, the immigration process when you come in with studies. Once you finish your studies here, right, you are automatically going to receive a 2 year or a 3 year postgraduate work permit. And then once you have the postgraduate work permit, if you work in Canada for a year, you are eligible for a permanent residence, right? I'm a permanent resident now in Canada. So just within 1 year, even though you have what's it called, 3 years postgraduate work permit, you can actually qualify and apply for your PR. And then within 2 years of having PR, you can also apply for your citizenship. So it makes it safe. That notwithstanding, there are other methods which probably would be long, like applying for an express entry from Ghana. You have to wait to be invited, be given the ITA, and then you submit your documents and get it. There are also other people who would come through work, especially with the auditors here. You can actually apply for secondment, or like apply through it's the same audit. So I've seen a lot of KPMG auditors move to KPMG Canada, Deloitte Ghana people, a lot of them applying. So they get a work permit directly and come. But yeah, for for students, it's safe. If you are married, you have kids, you can get a spousal work permit. You can bring your kids. You can bring everyone. And so it's just one of the recommended options, if you ask me. And, you know, I know Emily would also share her experience, but there are different routes, you know, that you can come on. But I think that's just one of the biggest ones, at least for Canada.
Thanks for sharing that. I have a few follow-up questions, but before we go there, Emily, how about you? What was your, do you have any other additions to the process? And if you could especially touch on how to get the visa, do you do interviews or do you just drop documents, you know, that kind of stuff?
Okay, yeah, Abigail kind of said everything. That's the process. But for the visa part, I don't know how much it has changed. So the thing about Canada too is, almost every year, I feel like they adjust to suit whatever they've experienced previously. So I know at the time I was applying for my visa, which was 2020, early 2020, there was lockdown and everything. So nobody could submit anything in person. So you had to do everything online. So you go to irtc.ca. That's the name, immigration something something Canada. But it's irtc.ca. And then you go to apply to come to Canada. Then you select which one you want to do. They'll ask you a series of questions. And then you choose that, okay, you want to come study for how long. And then when you finish, you could create an application for an application portal, which you have like I think 60 days to submit everything. And then once you submit it, then the process starts. So usually they ask you for your family background, where you're going to study. They ask for your admissions letter, proof of funds, and I think they usually ask for your biodata page of your passport. Then you attach the admissions letter. If there's any scholarship attached, that will be included in your proof of funds. And one thing you should keep in mind is, as at the time I was applying, I don't know if it's changed much. As at the time I was applying, you have to show at least 1 year of your tuition fee, like that you have funds for that. But then now I think a lot of people have spoken to a few people in the past month or in the last few months. I think now they're asking for you to be able to show your 2 years proof tuition fees. So you have to keep that at the back of your mind. They asked me for like at least 1 year tuition. When you submit all those documents, then you now have to go do biometric. The biometric place is the one at Abelenpe, if I'm not mistaken, Abelenpe Jowulu, that side. I think it's around Perez Chapel Jowulu, the dome, that side. You go there, so you have to book an appointment first. They'll give you a letter to say it's a biometric admission letter or something. So you have to print it. In addition, you bring your passport, and I think there'll be two documents from IRCC. I'm not too sure. I know that at least you bring the biometric. That is what they'll check at security gate. So when you take it in, you go, you pay that the biometric fee over there. I think you should be able to pay online or you pay over there. That you pay that, and then you go do your biometrics. They take pictures, the biometrics, and then when you're done, you go home. Usually, I think because of COVID, my time, I applied in May, but then I got a visa. The visa from, and they returned my passport in October. So that was like almost 6 months. Almost 6 months. But right now, I don't know how long it takes. I think go ahead.
Say you were waiting for a response for 6 months,
and also in between. So when I went to do the so what happened was I applied I think early May, then I did the biometric in June, because that is when they had lifted the COVID restrictions for you to be able to go outside and do things. So that is when I did my biometric, I think 14th June or something, or 12th June. And then in July, August, I think in August, then they called for medicals. Usually when you are called for medicals, most of the time, your visa is going to be approved. That's why I said most of the time, because I think I've seen at least one person who did medicals, but her visa was still denied. But usually if you are called to do medicals, then you know your visa is going to be approved, unless you have like a very bad fiscal help. And yeah, then that one don't deny you because they don't want you to come burden their health system already. So you may be denied a visa based on your like your health results. So that's a guest. So I was just waiting between, I think I did the medicals like I think 11th August or something. So I did it like August, then September, October. So late October was when I got an email saying that your visa has been approved. So submit your original passport for the like the visa stamp. So I had to go to DHL, pay for a return envelope or something. Yeah, a return envelope, put the passport in and send it to them. And a week later, I got the passport sent back to me. So that's the visa application process. Hopefully, I didn't miss anything. And disclaimer there, you just have to double check these things I've said as well so you don't rely solely on what I have said. Because I said they change, they don't really change it fully, but they just amend it, they tweak it as and when something happens or they've had like issues in like in the past year or something like that. So you just have to be mindful of, just double check what you're they're asking for before you do submit it.
Okay, cool. Thank you for running us through the visa process. Okay, all right. So switching back to Abigail, I just want to follow up on some of the stuff that you said. Whether the process is for study or for any other purpose of moving there, how much money is involved, and also how much influence do agents and consultants have? Do they really improve your chances? Okay. Hi, Abigail. If you are speaking, you are muted. Okay, I guess we'll circle back.
Yeah.
Abigail. But yeah, Emily, what do you think about this question?
Give me one. Abigail says she can't hear you. Probably, I think she'll probably have to log in again.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So had to go out and come back in. All right. But yeah, how much money was involved in this process? And of course, again, per your disclaimer, of always adjust these numbers. But even if you could even give these numbers in Canadian dollars, I think that could be more consistent over time. And how much help can agents give?
Okay, so truth be told, I think there are just a few agents that are actually legit, honestly. Most of them will just take your money and just do some 2x4 things for you. I remember in my when I was applying for my, how do you call it, permit, I met a girl who told me somebody else had also applied using an agent, and they didn't even have access to their IRCC portal. And apparently for proof of funds, you know that thing where they tell you, oh, we can help you get proof of funds and statements, bank statements for those things. The agent went to use some microfinance statement. And you as an individual, you're a mobile money vendor. How then do you have over, let me say, 200,000 Ghana cedis in your account? Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, even if you're trying to use somebody else's bank statement as your proof of funds, make sure it's tallies. Like, let there be a story, huh? Make it make sense. Let there be a story. But this time it didn't work. So the person didn't even get there. Like, I think within a month or two after going to do his biometrics, he just got the visa denied application. And he was wondering why, what was happening. And that's just one of them. Other people, I've heard another story of another agent who also did the same thing. He came as a student and then he realized, oh, this is what you can do to come into Canada. And he used the bank statement he used for himself. He started using the same bank statement to help people come as well. So he applied for like 7 people. And the thing about IRCC or even the developed world, let me just put it that way, developed world in general, they'll keep quiet and watch you do what you are doing. Then, because eventually they'll catch you. They don't mind. You enter the country, you waste money, for lack of a better word, waste money and spend money. Let me see you spend yourself. Spend money and go through school, pay them, pay the fees and everything. The government or the country is going to enjoy, But when you're coming to apply for permanent residency or work permit, and they tell you, okay, you came on false grounds, and then you'll be deported. But that's what happened. So about seven people were deported in addition to that particular man and his wife. They went back to wherever they came from. So agents, once when you want to use agents, you have to be double sure of what they are offering you. And some of them are too good.
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
True. So don't fall like prey to these people. And that because I already said, like we're also using this as a form of this thing. FYI, her husband is helping with the immigration process, and he's been here for a while, so he knows what's the like what to do. So if you need somebody, just reach out to Abigail. She'll be able to connect you to her husband to help you with that. Before you go to an agent, make sure you do your checks as well. Otherwise, you'll just spend your money. But all in all, if you don't have money to pay agents to help you, I feel like we as learned people in Ghana, at least if you've gone through undergraduate degree, you should be able to just apply for school yourself. Look for options that you think will be affordable in the sense that there are some provinces that are quite expensive, so you don't go there. If you want to, reach out to people online and almost everybody here on the call probably has one or two people who are in Canada. Just reach out to them and say, okay, what options are there? Do you know which school I can apply to, kind of thing? Like, ask nicely, not to demand from them, but then everybody is quite busy. So just ask nicely. They'll be able to at least give you a few pointers. You can apply for these schools, look out for funding options. Some schools have good funding options depending on your program. And once you get a good school, funding options are available, you'll be able to enter. Just know that at least you pay 50, give or take 50% fees if you are not going to schools that have good funding options for all programs. So just keep that in mind. And I think you mentioned something about cost. Elikem, honestly speaking, it varies. Like there's no standardized fee structure there that you can say, okay, Canadian schools between 5,000 and 10,000 or 20,000. Nope. My school fees, if I say it, that one you run. I'm sure it's like
Are you
Elikem's
sure? Let me
own.
see, but
Is
okay. Maybe I was wrong. I'll just giggle. But yeah, okay, to put to
it?
make that question to answer, we usually tell people about, oh, there's funding for that, then you could find scholarship, right? But realistically speaking, somebody who has ambitions of going outside of the country, how much money should they have saved? Or have some uncles and aunties willing to contribute. Should it be like $10,000 at least? Because there's tickets, visa fees, and all those things. Like
Oh,
roughly, what do you think is the
okay.
minimum?
No, so that's what I'm also
Rather.
saying. It depends on the program. So if you're doing, let's say, a business admin program, which is like maybe Masters of Business Administration, and you want to pay out of pocket, don't have at least 100,000 Canadian dollars. That is just for fees. Approximately 100,000 for fees. And then before you take care of your how do you call it? How do you call it? Cost of living, like your accommodation, your food. But then if you want programs, maybe let me see. Well, I'm a business person, so I don't remember. I don't know the other courses, but other courses can
Well,
range from.
yeah, I was
perhaps
going to give an example of education. I think UBC, the whole program is 14,000, right? And so for and diploma in accounting, there's a professional diploma in accounting program that's also around 12,000 to 14,000. And so if you split that, let's say the program lasts for 16 months or 2 years, so that would be 3,000, 7,000 a year. So split into semesters, 3,500 Canadian dollars per semester, and that's like the fees. And why am I sharing this? I'm sharing this because I think last year there was someone who actually came to live with me for a while, and she was doing one of these programs. And she basically came into Canada just with her ticket, right? And so I've also seen instances where people actually come and bank their hopes on working and paying. And you have to be very tough and someone who is very resilient to go through it. But then that is also possible. It's just that you know, in those cases, you just have to, like Emily was saying, make sure you can have some upkeep for, you know, rent and living. Because, for example, if you're coming to Vancouver, and Emily mentioned the cost of living of different places, rent mm-hmm. in Vancouver is crazy. You would probably be paying a minimum of $1,800 a month if you want to live alone, or $900 if you want to share a room with someone for rent per month. So you just have to do the math. Estimate for best case scenario, 3 months, worst case scenario, 6 months, you know, if you don't find a job. But for most people, or like in this case, most of the students that come end up, like, you know, looking for a McDonald's job, especially in the first month, or like, you know, a grocery store, just to, you know, make some upkeep and keep going, because they are paying their own fees. So for the programs where the fees aren't so much, you can actually, you know, come, work, pay, and do it. In fact, for the professional diploma course, which I think we just got 3 students in, for those ones, the program is only in the evening. And so for students from Ghana who come, they work 40 hours, like they work the normal full time and go to class from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. For those programs. So number one, it depends on your program, as Emily said. And number two, it actually also depends on the schedule of the program. And 3, it depends on how resilient you are. There are some people who would reach out to me, and just from like having a conversation with them, I'm like, I don't think if you come without anything, you can survive. And there are some people, Emily being number one on that list, like if they tell me they are moving anywhere and they don't know anyone, they don't have any money, I'm like, you're going to survive, go. So you just have to like know yourself very well and know how, you know, you can also go through some of these instances. Once you show, I think now the first year of fees, you don't have to show for the 2 years. You can actually, like that funding would be enough. But, you know, Emily also mentioned reach out to me. I'm probably not the right person. You can email nuconsulting.ca@gmail.com with all your questions. And I think the team would answer that, just because I'm probably not also very active on Twitter or social media. So that might be the best one to go through, the man himself who does it. But yeah, for amount, it differs. MBA, very tough. I would recommend getting at least 50% funding from your school, if possible, full funding. For me, I came through the MasterCard Foundation scholarship, so it was fully funded from tickets to, you know, rent to fees to feeding. Like, I didn't even have to cook. I was being provided food every day, right? So that is one option. And, you know, for the MasterCard Foundation in Canada, it runs only in, I think, McGill and UBC. Canada is very limited when it comes to scholarship opportunities. I know the MasterCard Foundation, or like from internal talks, it will be resurfacing again in 2024. And so that's something that folks can look out for. But when it comes to fully funded scholarships, they are very limited as compared, like when you compare it to their counterparts in the United States. So yeah, I think when it comes to funding, it's a case by case basis. Yeah.
Gotcha. Thank you. Thank you both for these detailed pieces of information. Abigail, can you give the email again so that Adam can share it for us?
So it's nuconsulting.ca@gmail.com. Okay. Or I can, Adam, afterwards, I can share direct contact with you so that if folks want to call or like reach out directly, they can reach out to my husband and his team that does that. Yeah, to assist. But yeah, nuconsulting.ca@gmail.com. Yeah.
That would be great. That would be great. So that we can post it and let people reach out. Great. So now let's move a bit to the more social side. When I'm thinking about my life here and my choice of school was when I was making that decision, the social life was not a part of that at all. And now I'm scratching my head, but you know, heads down. First question is, how cold is Canada? We've heard that people would it's so cold you'll be crying, your tears will be dropping, even your tears will freeze. Is that true?
I went to Emily's place, and I can say that is true for Emily's in Toronto. But in Vancouver, we have the best weather. The downside is it's expensive in terms of rent, and that's also because it's the warmest place in Canada, so everybody wants to live here. It's either sunny or raining in Vancouver. We barely get snow. In fact, when I came here, they said it was the first time it had snowed in 10 years. So, like, everybody was out to see the snow, not just the black people who had come to Canada. Even the white people, it was exciting for them to see the snow. But when you are going to a place like Calgary, Toronto, Emily would be the best person to answer it because I think she has succumbed to all the cold in those areas. I don't know how she does it, but maybe she can speak to those areas.
I mean, okay. So, like Abigail has already said, there's always like, you choose, how do I put this? If you want to go to Vancouver, they are paying for higher cost of living. If you want to go to a colder part of Canada, then the cost of living is way lower there. So I lived in Toronto for almost 2 years, and the cold was okay compared to what I experienced in Norway. Norway, I was actually up north as well, so it's like as cold as, let me say, Russia. I think Russia is one of the coldest places. So where we were living was close to how Russia was cold. But when I came to Canada, it wasn't very, very new to me. But typical Ghanaians, as we all are, geez, when you come into the country, when it's winter, yeah, you feel it for the fair. Like, you feel it. You'll be able to survive, though. Just come well prepared for, like, winter jacket, winter boots. And then we have warmers. So this kind of leggings or tights that you wear underneath your clothes. So you wear it before you wear your trousers, your shirts. And then make sure you are well covered, because if you don't take care, you get sick easily, like the pneumonia kind of thing. So you just have to be like well covered. Right now, I'm actually in Alberta. Alberta is actually colder than Toronto as well. That's why Abigail said I'll speak to it. Yeah, this place is also way colder. But then once you get used, I think after your first 2 winters, you should be fine. It's not you definitely not be able to withstand it fully, like saying, oh, I'm over the cold now. But then you get used to it, you prepare adequately for it. Make sure you have like heaters in your apartment. You're always drinking like hot tea, hot coffee if you drink coffee, or hot chocolate. Like, drink something to keep you warm, because you have to make a conscious effort not to fall sick. Otherwise, if you fall sick, you can't go to school, you can't go to work, you're losing money, you're not learning, you're not doing anything. So yeah, you'll be fine, don't worry. You have to adjust. Once you've made it, like you've made a conscious effort that I'm moving to Canada, you might as well just adjust your mind and prepare accordingly for it. So that's it. Unless you have any other question relating to it. I don't know how else to answer it, though. You have to experience it for yourself.
How is the healthcare system there like?
Healthcare? So back when I was in Toronto, in fact, the whole of Canada, yeah, I feel like, how do I put it? It's not as cool as it was in Ghana. Honestly, Ghana, like, I could be sick and I'll just walk into Nyaho, I'll see a doctor because it's a private place. This place, even the private hospitals, if you are sick, you want to see a doctor, you have to book an appointment. Earliest you can get probably is in 3-4 days. So when I came initially, I used to have a lot of nosebleeds. I had nosebleeds before I came to Canada, so it's not because of Canada. I used to have nosebleeds even in Ghana from Hamattan. So when I came here and my nose is bleeding, I feel like I was about to die. I could just feel like blood draining from my head. I rushed to the clinic, private clinic. I sat there for like almost 4 hours before I saw a doctor. And then I decided, okay, next time I would book an appointment. When I called to book the appointment, they said, the only time a doctor can see me is in 4 days. I'm like, I'm bleeding now. I can see doctor in 4 days. I just took my bag and I went to sit in the hospital again. I feel when you go sit there, even if you wait 4 or 5 hours, you still see a doctor eventually. But then it's a better option than you sitting in the house and booking an appointment, unless it's not a real emergency health scare or something like that. So that's the thing about it. I feel like there are few doctors, but then more people in the country. And then the other thing about it is once you become a citizen or permanent resident, though, you are assigned a family doctor. So you can just call, you can just Google online and see which family doctors are taking on patients. So that means that anytime you are sick, you have to go to that specific doctor. You can't just go to any other doctor. I think it's something similar to, a few people have that in Ghana. You have like family doctors, but this is the system for Canada over here. The international student, when you come, you can just walk into any hospital, but that is if there's a doctor available to see you. You have to pay for your own health insurance. I paid for two of them. One was called the Ontario Health Plan, and the other one was the Graduate Student Health Plan as well. You pay for that yourself annually. But when you become a permanent resident or citizen, you don't pay that again. I think the government pays for you. So that becomes much more helpful. But still, I don't think the health system is as good as the way it was in Ghana, because I went to the hospital a few times in Ghana and I can tell the difference. So just don't be expecting too much of it. I think that's how come there are also a few immigration programs. If there are any healthcare people here, you can check out, there are a lot of, they're now doing a few immigration programs to invite health professionals into the country as well. So you can use that as a route instead of coming to education.
That's it. Definitely a shocker that you are seeing that it's not as impressive as Ghana, the Ghanaian system was. I have had one or two experiences in the US that I could say same. But yeah, okay. And then we could move on to the cultural shock. How has it been for you? You've all been there for close to 3 years now. How was the cultural shock for you and how did you handle it? Perhaps start with Abigail.
I think for me, the first thing is I realized, and maybe it's a Vancouver thing. So one context, everything is province, like a province can be entirely different from another province. So one thing I realized is everybody is nice in Vancouver. Like everywhere you go, people want to talk to you. People are smiling. People are saying sorry for no reason. You know, cars will stop for you. Like it's extremely, I remember, someone came here and they're like, why is everybody nice? Why is everybody smiling? And so for a lot of the Africans who came, because we were about 20, they're like, sometimes when people are nice to them, it's like they don't believe it. It's like, is it superficial niceness? Should I look behind the niceness? But that was one thing here. The second thing, and because I came in an academic setting, I realized that the learning was very intense here. Number one, like every week there's an assignment, there's a project, and it's all counting towards your final score as compared to Ghana where, you know, you do a midterm assessment and then you do a final exam. No, here, like every week there's like a 5% assignment, a 10% group work, and it all counts. So if you get very involved in it, by the time you get to the end of the semester, you already have an A. And so that was a bit different. The third one I would say was how people related to their professors. You know, in Ghana, there's this reverence we have for professors. You know, you can't even speak against them. On the contrary, I saw people, you know, just people speak their mind in class. You don't even have to raise your hand to talk, right? Like, and we, the Africans, we always had our hands up waiting to be called. And these people are just like interrupting professors, saying what they think, you know, expressing themselves, calling them by their first names, no professor. And in fact, you actually rate professors. There's like an app for the students. I don't know if it was the same in the school for Emily, but people could actually go and rate the professors. It was almost like you are paying because you are hiring the professor to teach you, and so they had to give you the best. Like if a student complained about a professor, like the school took it seriously. And so it, as compared to, you know, what we had in Ghana, where, you know, you can't even speak against a professor, even when they are doing wrong, I think those were like a bit of a cultural shock, and just getting to know that someone could like literally interrupt a professor as they are teaching and just say what they are thinking, whether correct or wrong. I think those were quite new to me.
No. You have to give them all their titles. Okay, interesting. Emily, how about you?
I think what Abigail said actually does sum up the cultural shocks I saw as well. But the thing is, it wasn't too new to me because I experienced it from Norway. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, then it's regular everywhere. So yeah, the professors, you can just call, like, once they give you a point, like, let me say, they actually make sure to have, how do you call the thing? Like, office hours for you to come and sit there and chat with them, like, yes, your classmates. Yes, you can go there, chat with them, talk to them, what the process is, like, what problems you're having in class, how they can help you. And I think another thing I saw was the fact that in COVID like this, because we're doing it online, people will come, they'll be chatting, like, oh, how was your vacation? I'm like, how's my vacation part of your year? But then that's what they're doing. Like, you chat with them like you are classmates, like you are free, but you still have some form of definitely respect. But then they don't have it. They don't do it like the way Ghana, like, one, if you don't say professor, and I say doctor, they'll ask you, did you go to school for them? Mm. So that was the thing. Another thing was, I think the food. If you're Ghanaian, you're coming here, you say, oh, you're coming to eat, and you cry the first week. So prepare yourself for that as well. Unless you're a fan of junk like that, KFC, McDonald's, and those things. They don't really have any very specific, very good food. So that one also just shock you abroad. They tell you, oh, they're having a buffet, they're having a dinner. You go and sit there, you just see pie and the croissant and the carrot soup. Then you just walk away. So just get ready for that as well. I think those are the two major cultural shocks I think I saw.
Okay, that's interesting. Some people would be missing out on the fufu. I missed some fufu back in the Adenta area. But anyway, all right. So we start wrapping up now. And a question for both of you is, what do you like and dislike about your experience? And really, if you had a chance to redo it, would you choose Canada again? Emily, let's start with you this time.
Okay. If I had a choice, would I choose Canada again? Oh yes, like 100% choose Canada, because like I said, the immigration route was the easiest. Like compared to like, let me say, US, Australia, the other countries, Canada has actually one of the easiest immigration routes. So if you know your long-term plan after school, if you are leaving Ghana to come to school outside, is to immigrate fully, like at least to be able to stay here a bit longer than, at least more than 5 years, then yes, Canada is the best option for you. So yeah, I'll definitely choose it. Any regrets? I think the one thing I would probably regret is the fact that, so I did, like, the program I did, the master's I did, I didn't know much. I think one day I just woke up and I was like, okay, yeah, I want to leave Ghana. And then I started working on it. But then I didn't really do a lot of research like that. I just, you know, okay, yeah, I'll apply for the school, I'll do the essays and everything. At least I put in that work to be able to put in a very good application. But one thing I didn't know was, to get an internship over here, you start applying the year before. So, for example, if you're going to come to school, you're in 2023, right? So you're going to come to school in 2024 and you apply in the first round, let's say in August, and you got admission by September. Start applying for internships in August, like September, when you get the admissions, because they fill up most of these schools, sorry, most of these companies that take MBA graduates, MBA students for internship, or not even MBAs alone, like even undergrads, in any most of the programs, you have to apply the year before and then go through the interviews and everything. I'm sure Abigail can attest to that. Because once you miss that gap, they've closed application, they've closed it. It's just by God's grace that maybe one or two of them may still have a few openings because people did it. Somebody turned it down. Maybe some people got two offers for internship and they turned one down. That is when another space opened up in their company. You'll probably not get an internship early. That almost happened to me because I got to start school September 2020. Then I went to Canada in December 2020. I didn't know about it. I hadn't really spoken to anybody about it because I didn't know it was a thing. So by the time I got to Canada, it was April. Like, oh, applying for internship from like January, February. I think even from February, you're like, oh, everybody is full every year. Even I spoke to a few friends, like, oh, they've already gotten an internship. I'm like, what is happening? It was just by God's grace that, and this is one thing you should know, like networking. You have to talk to people. You know that thing when they'll tell you, oh, who you know. Oh, this one is very prominent in Canada. So who you know and who knows you, they will work hand in hand here. So I was just talking to somebody randomly, like, oh, he knows a hiring manager somewhere. Then I sent my CV. The person was like, okay, send your CV. Are you going to go back to school after your internship? He said, yes. I'm like, okay. So they sent my CV around. I got through the interview. So within 2 weeks, I got interviews and then I got an internship. So that's one thing. So it's not really necessarily a regret, but then if maybe I should come back again, I'll put that at the back of my mind and do it early. Likewise, a full-time job too. That one is a full course on its own. You actually have to actively start networking right from when you get admissions. Even outside of school, even if you come through like the other routes Abigail mentioned, if you want to come through express entry, you want to come through entrepreneurship or something, which other routes are there, use network. You have to network, like reach out to people, go to LinkedIn. If you know somebody on Instagram, always posting about Canada, come to Canada kind of thing, make sure they are legit first, but reach out to them like, okay, build your network base. Join them, like follow them on Instagram, LinkedIn, all these things. And then you see what they post. Some of them will post job opportunities there. You can tell them, oh, I want to apply for this job. Can you give me a referral or something? Some of them are nice enough to tell you yes. Some of them will just tell you no, or they'll ignore you. Out of 10 people, if you ask them, maybe 3 of them will respond. That's a very good number. You go with that. So build your network, start networking, and reach out to people before you even finish school. If you are finishing school in 2025, start networking by 2024 to apply for jobs to get it before you finish school in 2025. That's how Canada is. You keep that at the back of your head. Otherwise, you'll be left stranded at the time you're done with school, which also happened to me. But then I got through it because I had friends like Abigail who had me, like, they always had me at a, like, I'm at like top right part of their head, like always thinking about me. So it was through that I was able to meet people when I got referred to somebody, went through the interview, then I got a full-time job. So you have to do that. Talk to people. If you don't open up, nobody will know. I know Ghana, we are used to keeping quiet about things like this. Like, oh, you are scared, or maybe they'll embarrass you, they'll shy. See, when it comes to Canada, remove that shyness from your eye. I'm speaking Ghanaian English. Remove the shyness and go out there and ask. You get references, you get referrals, then they get you jobs. Even if the person can't help you directly, they may give you a referral to somebody else who will be able to help you. So that's it. So that's one regret or something that I always keep at the back of my mind. Yeah. Happy girl.
Yeah, I think Emily has sufficiently covered all the stuff. I think, when it comes to the networking, it's one of the important things. And that is one thing I like about Canada, because no matter who you are, you don't need to know people in high places to be able to land yourself a job or an opportunity. All you need to do is put in the work, reach out to people, use LinkedIn. Like, I was amazed at how people were willing to chat with me just by virtue of me reaching out and asking them to reach out. On the flip side, for me, I think I really heard about applying for jobs when, like, I came to school in January. I started applying the year before in September. So, and one thing about doing that is, you know, update your resume. Don't put Ghana on it. Put Canada. Like, put, because you are about to come to Canada. It really changes the mindset of the hiring manager. We are not doing the whole interview resume stuff here, but if you do that, you update your LinkedIn, it could land you interviews before coming in. So by the time you are coming to school, you already have an internship, and chance there's 80% chance that those internships will offer you a full-time role after school. So that really helps. I think for me, I would say that it's been a really great experience. If I had a redo, I would do the same thing again, because not only has it really created opportunities, I think I wouldn't have gotten if I was in Ghana, just because, you know, without having any links to certain places, you don't get some opportunities in Ghana, but here it's like a fair playground for everybody. You just need to put in hard work. So I think that has worked well. The immigration route has been great. I've been able to, you know, since coming, help a lot of people, help my family all move here. So it's been good. What else? Regrets? I can't think of one now. If I think of one, I'll text it to you, Eli Kemen, and you can somehow edit it into the podcast. But I think it's been a great experience. For me, I know people would say, you know, stay in Ghana, work. Even if you would go back to staying in Ghana and work, I think that getting an international experience really changes your perspective about a lot of things, about life, about how you view a lot of, about how you even do your work. And so I am an avid believer in, you know, travel, get that experience, get that international perspective. Even if, you know, you want to stay in Ghana and work, I think that it's a really great game changer. So yeah, that would be my last words, or I guess admonishment to everyone on the call and anyone that gets the chance to listen to this.
That was great. Travel and see, as some people say, and your mind would be open to the possibilities. Your work ethics would improve. Okay, great. Thank you, Emily and Abigail, for sharing your experiences and these tips. I've posted a reply to the tweet for this space with an email, nuconsulting.ca@gmail.com, and a phone number, a flyer. Contact them for more information, and please especially do so because this is Abigail's husband's business. You know, she's given us so many tips. I feel like if you go there, you'll be well sorted out. All right, so yeah, get all the help you need if you are considering a move to Canada so that you can do it well. If anyone joined late or they've not or they didn't hear anything well, you can just go play back this conversation here on X or Twitter, or wait a couple of days, check on YouTube and app and wherever you listen to podcasts for it. While you're at it, do follow us here on X. This is weird. Yes, follow us here on X or Twitter, and also on Instagram, Facebook, and share our profile, share this podcast, share this recording with other people. Let's enough people have sufficient information so that they can make the right decisions. And while you're on Instagram, follow @investmentfriend or @investment_friend. We go beyond what we do here at Money Convos to give you more tailored information towards your unique situation. There's a general information on personal finance and investments, but you want information that is more tailored to you, where someone would ask you questions, you could have a back and forth, and you could get the assistance you need. Also, there are quite a lot of exciting challenges that go on there. You'd see Mimi up on here on stage with us and Sarah in the audience. I did not know, well, for Sarah, I could imagine that she could be a social media queen, but for Mimi, it's quite a surprise to see. So very amazing content that they have there and insightful content there. I'm impressed by it. So yeah, follow Money Convos, follow @investment_friend on Instagram. and go on and send an email to nuconsulting.ca@gmail.com to get Canada migration specific information. Thank you once again, Emily and Abigail, for honoring our invitation. I feel like a lot of people would walk away from this with sufficient information, or at least have the right questions to ask. And until next time we talk again, I wish you all a good time. Have a good week. Be productive. And if you are thinking about traveling, make sure that you are getting the right information. Thank you all and have a good night. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.